I would love to talk about the opportunity and the challenges around rural broadband access.
40%, I believe, of all rural areas today lack access to high-speed internet connectivity. Connectivity and broadband in general is an entire state problem that needs to get addressed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. I'm Mike Katz, Executive Vice President of the T-Mobile Business Group. And today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jim Weaver. Jim is the Secretary and State Chief Information Officer of North Carolina Department of Information Technology. He has over 30 years of leadership and management experience in the IT industry and has been nationally recognized 3 times by the National Association of State Chief Information Officers, or NASCO, and 2 times by Computer World Honors. Well, Jim, thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to have you here. I know how busy you are because of all the great work you're doing in North Carolina. So thank you for taking the time to do this.
Thrilled to be here. Look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. I wanted to start with kind of a buzzy area. And a lot of people talk about smart cities and what smart cities are and how they're deploying them. But I wanted to get your thoughts on smart cities. How do they apply in North Carolina? How are you thinking about them? Are they a part of your technology strategy in the state?
So when we think about smart cities and the technology that's necessary to support smart cities, really at the end of the day, you have to understand a little bit better about the topology of North Carolina. And while we're seeing, obviously we have some large metropolitan-like centers here in North Carolina. North Carolina, though, very much is a rural state. And unfortunately, the concepts around smart cities doesn't really lend itself to the ability for us to actually do some of that innovative stuff in our more rural areas of the state. So when we look at our urban areas, I think very much that the leveraging of technologies like 5G, as an example, it's critical for us to be able to help address the high-speed internet connectivity issues that we're encountering here in our state, as well as some of the other innovative things that that allows us to do. When you think about our the digital highway that we're going to have to be participating of and being part of here as we move forward, as you think about our the younger generation of the workforce that's coming into our cities, there's a certain expectation of the ability to be connected at any time, any place, anywhere. And so really that concept of the smart city and the capabilities that 5G and what may come beyond 5G really is going to enable that type of interplay and connectivity. When you think about the fact that if we're doing things correctly and we look at like public transit as an example, and the ability for me in a real-time aspect to maybe update electronically my bus pass and then be able to walk on the bus and the bus already has that update that I just made, because we're able to do that real-time synchronization type activities leveraging 5G. When you think about public safety in our cities, 5G, I think, is going to play a critical part of that as well. So I'm really excited about what the concepts of smart cities are, and more importantly, how it's going to be able to enable us to get connected down to the last users. I'm fond of saying is the industry really talks a lot about last mile. Really, what we got to do is talk about last user, because our user population wants to be mobile, wants to connect wherever they're at speeds to do what they need to do. 5G is going to enable that type of activity for us. So it's really exciting to see what the capabilities are as we get to the higher bandwidth capabilities, if you will, of 5G, and being able to get to that saturation, get to those higher degrees of speeds. Who knows what's going to be able to get generated from that as we move forward in our cities.
As you think about some of those experiences that you just said, how are you prioritizing? Because I'm sure it's easy to get distracted by like all these capabilities of the future. But as you think about the big technology priorities for the state, both in your urban and in your rural areas, like how are you prioritizing some of the decisions that you're making?
Well, very clearly, the governor has a very focused agenda for me as Secretary of Information Technology. So first and foremost, to be clear, my number one priority is really broadband. If you want to call that connectivity, I think those words interchange a lot, but 40%, I believe, of our rural areas today lack access to high-speed internet connectivity. That number obviously goes down dramatically when we look at our urban areas, but at the same time, when you look at our urban areas, the populations that are being impacted in those urban areas probably equates to the same level of the population levels that are sitting out in our rural areas as well. So connectivity and broadband in general is an entire state problem that needs to get addressed. And so first and foremost, that's what we're targeting. We recognize the importance of connectivity in our state. You know, as I said before, there's a reason why the state of North Carolina is seeing all these businesses come there. It's because we have an infrastructure for them to plug into. We have a workforce that's capable and ready to engage in these types of activities. But we also know that we have over 1.1 million people in our state, which is roughly 10% of our state population, that is on the wrong side of the digital divide. They lack access to high-speed internet connectivity. We cannot afford to let them behind. There is a cost if we do that. And that cost is going to be to our future generations here in the state of North Carolina. We need to make sure we do that. But we also need to make sure we're doing it in an equitable fashion. So equity's got to be at the forefront of all the things that we do. And when we look across our connectivity here in our state, we see that Caucasian households are connecting at a high-speed connectivity at 76%. And I'll define high-speed connectivity as 100 down, 20 up. Which differs from the FCC definition of 25.3, just so we're clear. But then when we get to across our racial subdivisions, when you look at Native American households, that number drops dramatically to 57%. When you get to our African American communities, that number is only at 64%. And when you get to our Latinx community, that number is only at 67%. So you can see that we have a wide disparity here as far as the affordability to, or the accessibility to connect to the high-speed internet to avail everybody. And so the governor is very clear in what he wants us to accomplish, and that is that across all racial subdivisions, 80% of our households will be connected to high-speed internet connectivity in 4 years, January 2025. We also have another goal where we recognize the importance of connectivity when we look at education opportunities for our children. That was clearly shown over the last 15 months with the pandemic. And with that in mind, the governor's challenge to us is to get to all households with children to get to 100% connectivity, because we do recognize the importance of a child's ability to get a quality education and the impact that has for our economy and our future generations here in the state. Now, we're looking at doing that across three different areas. First and foremost is the build out of infrastructure. And the governor's signature piece of his ARP investment plan is around broadband. And so he's proposing a $1.2 billion investment in broadband for the state of North Carolina. $600 million of that is actually targeted for the build out of infrastructure. Another $420 million of that is targeted to address the affordability piece of high-speed connectivity as we look at North Carolina. And this is really a build-off, if you will, of the current emergency broadband benefit that is out there today that the FCC is administering. Today, so far, we've gotten about 100,000 of our households of that 1.1 million registered for that plan. We're not anywhere close to getting to 1.1 million. So we have more work to do there. And then lastly is really focusing around literacy and enablement. The governor's proposing $165 million investment in literacy and enablement, which is really targeting about devices. It's talking about education opportunities. And again, making sure that as we're connecting households to the high-speed internet, they're not falling victims to the nefarious actors that are out there. So we have to have a cyber component to this as well. And so that we have a very vigorous schedule, I guess you might want to say, for the next 4 years to work around cyber.
It really underscores the size and scope of the role. I mean, I don't know how you sleep at night. That's a busy next few years for you.
It's an exciting opportunity, though. I mean, this is like we are here at a transformative moment in North Carolina, to be honest. The state's financial picture is very robust. We have opportunities coming from the federal government through the use of ARP funds. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity here for us in North Carolina to go do some really great things that transform and impact people's lives. And this is our moment to shine. So while it sounds overwhelming, as you can see, it's also exciting as all heck to be able to be in a position to hopefully be able to deliver on some of those transformative opportunities to really make a difference in people's lives here in North Carolina.
I would love to double click into a couple of those areas because they're all fascinating, and we could spend an entire session just talking about each one of them. But I would love to talk about the opportunity and the challenges around rural broadband access. And I know. It sounds like there's a big amount of budget being appropriated towards solving that. But how do you go about solving that? Given you know, you just said the size and scale, like 40% of the state being rural. Like, what is the approach and some of the solutions that you're thinking about deploying to get access to people?
So as we, you know, obviously the most obvious answer is to build out of fiber infrastructure at the end of the day. But we're gonna, some of the geography of our state, it's gonna make it very difficult to deliver in all communities with fiber. We're also looking at fixed wireless solutions. We're also looking at leveraging more of the low Earth orbiting satellites. We've had some very successful pilots here with that as well. The thing we have to be careful about is that, you know, especially when we talk about the satellite technology that exists there today, and we just kind of seen it as ELSA rolled through North Carolina yesterday, is the fact that if we do get the big storm that sits over North Carolina, that in essence is going to block out satellite communications, and we can't afford to take our state out of commission, if you will, and being able to communicate with the public or allow them the ability to communicate as well. So we're going to look at every tool that's in our toolbox, and we're going to look at what tool addresses at the right location, at the right community, what is that tool solution that makes it the most sense to get us to what we want. We are, as I said, looking at 100 down, 20 meg up. That's not aspirational, but we think that's a realistic target number for us to be able to achieve across the state of North Carolina. If you ask me, I would say that we're shooting for 200 meg symmetrical, but you know, in 4 years, 200 meg symmetrical, who knows what it's gonna be, right? As technology continues to evolve. As we start looking at, you know, IoT, and IoT devices, and I think we saw during the pandemic examples across the country where IoT devices played a huge role. I can think of some colleagues out in the West Coast in California that were able to leverage IoT devices in the sewage lines to predict the next outbreak of COVID within their city. It's amazing stuff. The analysis of sewage, and they were 100% accurate within 2 weeks of being able, and they allowed them to shift resources and be in a better position to prepare and respond to those scenarios when they came about. UAV, autonomous vehicles, maybe not something as we're gonna see as much of in the East Coast as the West Coast due to the population density, especially on the highways. I couldn't imagine I-95 having a UAV. Who knows? That's not outside the realm of possibilities at some point in time here. So I think as technology continues to evolve in the manner that it is, I don't know what that aspirational goal is going to be as far as speeds and feeds go. But what we're trying to get to today, though, is a speed that we believe we can achieve without hesitation across the state of North Carolina. And that's why we settled in on 100 down and 20 up.
When you think about both delivering broadband to residents that just live in areas where it just historically hasn't either been available or there's been very little choice, or in the other big priority that you have, which is creating equity for broadband because people may not have the financial means to get equal access. As you're thinking about your strategies on how to deliver simultaneously on both of those things, how important has public-private partnership been to that? I know there's federal broadband funds that have been available, but are you leveraging private sector as well to help you go address some of these challenges?
Yeah, exactly. Because this is going to take a village to make this happen. This is not one or two people. This has got to be a unified team approach. And our supplier community needs to be a large piece of this activity here. Many of our suppliers have critical data elements that we need to have access to. You know, as an example, if we look at the FCC, how FCC maps some of this, it's at the census block level. That is a very slippery slope for us to be on because it doesn't really tell us that we're making connectivity to the households, right? But the supplier community has that data. The supplier community has the ability to tell us that we have service to these addresses. We can start overlaying other data then that starts telling us what's the racial subdivision composition across these households. And are we truly now starting to achieve the equity numbers that we're looking for and getting those numbers up to 80% or even greater if we're lucky enough to make that happen. So we definitely are going to be totally are relying upon our private sector partners in this process. And we're counting on that, and we're counting on the private sector to be very collaborative in helping us figure out how to solve some of these opportunities that are out there. Because again, we can't do it ourselves. We need everybody, and like I said, everything's on the table as far as in the toolbox goes for us to make use of and deploy. So whether or not it's wireless, whether or not it's more mobile focused, whether or not it's fiber focused or cable, all those solutions are on the table for us to achieve the outcomes that we're looking for over the next 4 years.
You mentioned earlier the pandemic, you know, both shining a spotlight and being a forcing function to make a lot more progress in some of these areas, particularly you mentioned schools and kids that, you know, when school went virtual, and if you didn't have broadband, you didn't have school. I'm curious to hear from you, how many of these technologies and capabilities do you think are going to remain in North Carolina and be leveraged in North Carolina post-pandemic?
I think they are going to be honest, because we made that investment in them already. So why would we not leverage the investments that we have already put in place to help us facilitate and continue to move forward? But you brought up the point about online education, and as our children were forced to get educated online at home, you know, besides connectivity, the other problem of that equation was around devices. So again, you know, as we go back to the bigger plan around accessibility, affordability, and literacy and enablement, we also need to make sure that we have the right devices that can connect to the internet that provides that experience as well. And I, you know, when during my days in Washington, that was one of the focal points was, and you talked about those private-public partnerships, a lot of them came through in delivering appropriate devices to start connecting kids, especially when you looked at the Seattle School District as an example, since you're out in Seattle. You know, a lot of those children didn't have the devices at home to be able to partake of online education. And so we also got to make sure that we're taking this into consideration as we move forward. As far as the remote workforce goes, we're going to probably be continuing in a hybrid model. You know, as we're emerging at the tail end of the pandemic, and hopefully it's the tail end of the pandemic. I almost feel like I should knock on wood when I say that, but it's also exciting because there's going to be some type of return to work here. But I do believe the fact that the capabilities and the demonstrations that we've shown over the last 15 months that remote work is a possibility. Will continue to go well with us, especially in the IT community, because we're not public facing. Even though we're public sector and we're supporting government activities, we're behind the scenes, and I think that affords us some opportunity to continue to work remotely, unlike maybe some of my sister agencies here in North Carolina that are very much focused on serving the public, and there are times for the public to have to interact with them in brick and mortar locations or whatever the case may be. But again, too, hopefully as we become more digital, not online, but more digital, maybe some of those instances or circumstances for that public interaction can kind of wane a little bit, and we're able to allow our residents to engage in government at any time of the day or night that they would like to do so. But we're going to continue to probably operate in a remote hybrid environment for some time. And we're going to see what those impacts are, and are we able to truly provide the needed IT services as quickly as our agencies are asking for that support as they're coming back, as the public's starting to come back into their buildings and engage them face-to-face on critical service needs.
But hey, Jim, we have a emerging tradition on Taking Care of Business ending these sessions with a set of rapid-fire questions.
Go for it.
So if you're up for it, I'd love to start a rapid-fire round now. And I think this first one is inspired by your fairly recent move from the Pacific Northwest down to North Carolina, which is hot or cold weather? What say you?
Hot weather.
You know, and again, this is a question I think we're all battling with, you know, coming out of the pandemic, which is suits or sweatpants?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm more of a, well, if I'm probably more of a suit and tie guy than I am a sweatpant guy, but I mean, there are appropriate times for sweatpants, let's be honest.
Well, the nice thing about still being on video is sometimes you can do both, you know, because if it's just the top half, nobody has to see if you're wearing sweats on the bottom.
I wasn't going to go there.
Favorite celebrity?
Will Smith. He's a Philadelphia guy.
Ah.
I gotta go with the hometown team in Philly.
Yeah. Bus or train?
Train. It's easier to do work as well. I hate to say that, but yeah, there's some beautiful train rides that you can. I have not had the opportunity yet to leverage the rail system here in North Carolina, but I hear going to Charlotte on the train is something I need to do.
How about morning or night owl?
Morning. That goes back to my days in the military.
And then beach or mountains?
I'm a Navy brat, beach.
Okay, and this last question, I admit, may be a little bit dangerous for you to answer, given your new locale. But the people want to know, Tar Heels or Blue Devils?
Oh, that's... when I answer this question, I have to give you a backdrop to the story, okay? The answer is Blue Devil. A lot of my staff here is either NC State or UNC, obviously. But the backdrop to the story is I grew up watching Big East basketball, which to me was, if you think about the early 80s, the Big East was the powerhouse basketball conference. And the coaches and the players were equally as prominent as personalities. So needless to say, I was a huge Don Thompson, Georgetown fan. And my heart broke when some kid that wore 23 playing for UNC hit that shot on the wing and sank my Hoyas in the national title game. So I ever since then, no way I can root for UNC. So go Dukies.
Yeah. He didn't go on to do anything, so don't worry about it. That was the peak of his career.
Yeah, little did we know that we were watching greatness then, to be honest. But yes, it was Sleepy Floyd's pass. I got picked off, and it's just like, oh my gosh.
I think you'll have half the state that will forgive you for that one. Jim, hey, thank you so much. It's I think the citizens of North Carolina should be really proud that they have you working on these issues, and they have somebody that's so focused on creating equity, creating opportunity. And you know, really, the things that you're doing do that in today's modern world. If you don't have these connections, if you don't have access to broadband, it's hard to have opportunity. Whether it's with school, whether it's in your job, whether it's even access to healthcare, and it's so exciting to hear about a leader like you and the governor of North Carolina making that such a huge priority for the state. So thank you for everything.
Yeah, thank you for those kind words. But it's easier for me. Having Governor Cooper, who's very passionate about those same topics, as you just noted. So it's empowering.
Well, and thank you for the great legacy that you left here in the state of Washington. I know that you had that same passion when you were here, and it's made a huge difference. So thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for being here with us today. And it's great to get the opportunity to hear about all the wonderful things that you're doing in the state of North Carolina.
Okay, thank you again for the opportunity. Thank you so much.
As a reminder, for each episode of this season of Taking Care of Business, we're excited to expand our Project 10 Million donation to a school district of our guest choice, making further progress towards bridging the schoolwork gap. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Taking Care of Business. We'll see you later.